The Musician's Musician Podcast is brought to you by you. For real. We rely on listener donations to grow the show, so if you'd like to support what we do, you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. Just follow the link in the description. It's super easy, because PayPal. A huge thanks to those of you who have already given. We also want to ask if you could be so kind as to rate and subscribe to the program on whatever platform you use to listen to us. It helps the show reach more ears, and we love your feedback. Okay, on to the show. Well, Max,
Parker,
tell me.
It's been a heck of a day.
Boy, has it. My wife and I were just talking that it's just been an absurdly long week already.
It's a Tuesday.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not going to fight you on that, but I just do need to point out that it has not been very far into the week yet, and you know, I guess it's just one of them.
And that's when the dark thoughts start creeping in. But
don't give in. Don't give in to them, Parker.
Don't tell me what to do.
No, you need my voice of positivity and reason in your dark times, especially because you tell me.
Nah, I need the polemics. That's who gives me joy.
Oh.
But something that can bring you a little bit of joy. Something we're trying to do on our Instagram page. Max and I are both frequently reached out to by our peers for recommendations for things to listen to. So, because I'm bad at communicating with people, our way around that is if you follow us on Instagram at the Musician's Musician Podcast, we will frequently both be posting what we're listening to throughout the day.
So, it's kind of fun. You know, one of us prefers one streaming platform and the other uses another, which makes things a little inconvenient when we want to share music because, you know, we actually have to go and find it and look it up and make sure it's the right thing because links don't work at all. But one of us is into Spotify, the other's into Apple Music. So, you know, it shouldn't be too hard to figure out, honestly.
Based on the selections, I guess. But
yeah, the several albums I put up there today are just, you would listen to some of them, but some of them you would absolutely not. We've been doing this for a while, and it's already been fun.
Yeah.
But
anyway, so go follow us on Instagram if you want to be up to date on different listening recommendations throughout your day. Also to be up to date on episodes that are coming out and stuff like that. But getting into the meat, what are we talking about today, Max?
Well, we are talking about, I think I'm justified in saying this, he is one of the very few, I guess contemporary with us, jazz celebrities. And, you know, jazz, obviously, we're using that term very loosely, but we're talking about Kamasi Washington. And he's done a whole lot of stuff. He's played with all sorts of people. He's got a very interesting sound that has found its way onto his own solo records, as well as a ton of other stuff, and in, you know, various media forms as well. But Kamasi just kind of came out of seemingly nowhere, but in truth, it was L.A. and has, you know, been everywhere from on playing jazz clubs, which he doesn't really do so much anymore because now he's playing stuff venues the size of Coachella, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we wanted to talk about him is because he is a success story of kind of being able to bring this kind of music to the big stage. While Kamasi's music is not necessarily like straight-ahead jazz, and I would hesitate to even call it jazz, which is a recurring theme in this podcast, but certainly is largely influenced by jazz, and he's nailed the marketing, and he's nailed the branding, like a discussion that a good friend of mine and I had a while ago is that somebody needs to get a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and just like do a complete rebrand for jazz. Not that it necessarily really needs it, but just doing something so that the masses can kind of dig into this without feeling like it's this big scary thing. But Kamasi is serving as a very good bridge for that market that typically maybe wouldn't consume this music.
And which is really interesting to me because his music is not mainstream by any stretch. Like, he's worked, I mean, he's worked with Nas and Snoop Dogg and Thundercat and Flying Lotus and Rafael Sadiq and you name it. There's a whole ton of people. However, his stuff that he's playing these big venues for, playing in these big venues, I should say, is very art music. And that's one of the things to me that's so cool is that he has this extremely authentic style and presentation and whole everything about him that he is owning and killing it with. Like, he's really, really making big moves, doing very interesting things that are harkening back to the concepts that we have talked about with other artists, as well as some other ones that are particularly more manifest in Kamasi himself.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about his background. So you already mentioned Max. He is an LA musician. He's born and raised in LA, still lives there, very passionate about his city. And he went to the Alexander Hamilton High School, and which is a very good music school, or at least they have a good music school. And then he went on to study at UCLA in the Department of Ethnomusicology, playing with faculty members like Kenny Burrell, Billy Higgins, Gerald Wilson. And so and his father was also a musician. So he had, grew up with music and then was very, very well educated and was also good friends with a lot of very good and, currently also very accomplished musicians.
To me, it sounds quite a bit like our friends in A Tribe Called Quest. You've got these guys that are growing up. Kamasi definitely has a much more formal education in like music theory and arranging and composition. But boy, does he definitely have something going on that sounds like the Native Tongues Collective. So he's got these friends that are doing rad stuff in and of themselves. But really, he was part of a group called the West Coast Get Down, which started when they were in high school. There's quite a bit of mentorship going on from, a lot of the elders in the community, because a lot of these guys came from musical homes. And there were other people in the community that were, helping them develop as musicians and people. But, the churches that they're playing in, the West Coast Get Down, in schools, like there's so much going on, as well as all of the popular music of the day that you're getting in LA. LA is a huge breeding ground for all sorts of stuff. And that's one thing that you hear in Kamasi's music that we'll get into later because it's a whole thing, is that he is so good at fusing things and putting them together while still preserving the integrity of the individual parts themselves.
So amongst some of those in the West Coast Get Down are some pretty prominent names. People like Steven Bruner, otherwise known as Thundercat, Cameron Graves, Tony Austin, Brandon Coleman, Miles Mosley, Ryan Porter, Terrace Martin, Patrice Quinn. Some really great
big
musicians.
Names.
Huh?
Oh, I just said big names.
Yeah, like certainly some people who have been having a lot of success in their own right. I mean, Miles Mosley has been playing with a lot of people, as has Cameron Graves, as has Ronald Bruner Jr., and Thundercat's like his own thing. Like a lot of these guys are doing huge things. I mean, Terrace Martin is also a huge success story. And there's a fun anecdote with this group is in the early teens of our current century, the group kind of all pitched in and rented out a studio for an entire month, and they just worked.
That is expensive.
That's not cheap. But
especially back then.
Yeah, and everybody, everybody had to commit like to not take any gigs, to not take any tour dates, no fly dates, and just be there every day for the whole month. But what that resulted in was several albums. One of the albums that came out of that session that I really enjoy is one by Cameron Graves called Planetary Prince. It's really really interesting stuff going on. But all of it totaled more than 170 songs. The reason we share this is just to kind of demonstrate that, like, these guys were, when they were very young, but continue to be into their professional lives, just absolutely dedicated and entrenched in their art and in what they're doing and in making sure that they're putting in the time so that what you're hearing is a genuine representation of kind of the blood and sweat that's going into this music.
Yeah, continuing to put yourself in positions to be immersed in an experience that's going to cause you to grow and put you with people that are also going to inspire you and challenge you is something that's extremely important. You know, in any discipline, you know, if you're an engineer, if you're some type of artist or in culinary arts or, you know, whatever it is, that immersion is, I think paramount to being great. And we see this huge melting pot of all of these different styles because these guys are playing with all sorts of people. And then they're also playing with each other on each other's records, and they come together and really develop something that you wouldn't get in any other way. But this is one of really the hallmarks of Kamasi Washington. One of his philosophies is community. And I think the emphasis and the length that he has gone to preserve that and to invest in his community, you know, whether that be musically or, you know, staying in LA or, you know, whatever that is, I think is really important. And I think is a really cool philosophy that has affected him and his music tremendously.
And additionally, a lot like Tribe, another very important philosophical underpinning is this idea of Afrocentrism and really connecting. I mean, Max, you and I have previously off air talked about kind of this whole thing is that there's he talks a lot about this almost mystical kind of pseudo religious connection to Africa that is really important to him. And just to kind of segue that a little bit into getting a little bit more into the music, there's a quote of his that I liked a lot that I pulled from an interview that he did. Also, this is in reference, Kamasi played Coachella a number of years ago, and this was just to kind of give you a setting for this. He says, "I walked around a lot last weekend, and there was a more diverse crowd. I'm not as into the idea of the divides of music, because when I hear rock bands, I hear links to funk and jazz. American music comes from the same tree, but sometimes we get to these places in history where we forget where things come from and they get compartmentalized. So when you see a jazz band at Coachella, it's like, whoa, there's a jazz band at Coachella. But when you look at Beyoncé's set with all the horns and brass, in those arrangements, I could hear that somebody listened to some jazz. I hear it and see it everywhere, but I do feel like we're celebrating African-American culture in a way that's unique to this time period." Close quote. And the thing that's great about this is that when we talk about Kamasi's music, this is a great bedrock to start having this conversation on, because Kamasi, you know, reportedly has a very strong connection to jazz, obviously, but also to a lot of other you know, Black American music, you know, very much with R&B and with the blues and with soul and gospel music. And you hear that in his music, in that it's not just, you know, this sort of narrow parochial view of jazz that's kind of developed over the last number of years. It's very much this more broad idea of Black American music, which again is a very strong philosophical underpinning for how he is approaching composition and playing overall.
The very narrow view of jazz is something that is, I think, unfortunately prominent and has been unfortunately, I guess, fostered by even some really great names. I played trumpet quite a bit growing up. I looked up to Wynton Marsalis a lot. There's a quote he gave saying, "There's nothing sadder than a jazz musician playing funk." And that just kind of hurts because, like, there's some really cool stuff in funk, but there's so much to be gained from it. When you talk about, like, the horn sections that you see in, like, Beyoncé's band, or that you're seeing in like Bruno Mars, or like those sort of things, there's still something to be learned from that. And that's something that we really see with Kamasi's music in general. He is constantly developing these other influences into what he has, which I think is very cool, and I think is very informative of his outlook and approach as well.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not to say that there isn't a lot of value to be pulled from the jazz tradition as a standalone thing. But again, like this is definitely an idea being espoused by a lot of very prominent voices in the music community now. Yeah, so when you're listening to Kamasi, I mean, like one guy that comes to mind is Quincy Jones when we talk about Kamasi, in that like Quincy Jones has this, like, he's done like a lot of film scoring and a lot of large ensemble scoring and compositions and arrangements, and Quincy Jones also very much pulls from this like Black American music tradition. And Kamasi to me is not necessarily like a modern day Quincy Jones per se, but there's a lot of those tendencies in that, like, his music is very cinematic and like very, very well orchestrated, but it's also very obviously pitted in this tradition in a more broad sense, as opposed to saying this tradition in the view of simply just saying like jazz music. It's a much more broad context that we're referring to.
I do want to say, actually, this is something I think you and one of our other roommates at the time told me that really hit home, was like, if you're going to be good at jazz, you have to like spend like 6 to 9 months doing like eat, breathe, sleep jazz. That's it. You know,
probably longer like than really, that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, just like to get, like to start getting your feet under you and like in your formative years. And I think it's important to really take time to be good at what you're doing. And we're definitely not saying that embracing this culture of many different styles and genres is the only way to do it, because, like, you know, if you're going to get good at something, you got to like spend some time doing it. If you're going to learn the tradition, you got to spend some time doing it. And Kamasi grew up listening to John Coltrane and like all of these huge jazz greats. So like there's definitely a foundation that's, you know, created. There's a lot going on, but one of the hallmarks of Kamasi's sound is this fusion and inclusion that you get from the larger tradition of Black American music.
Yeah, and so just a couple more points to make. So for one, I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but in regards to Kamasi's releases as a band leader, he likes to write for large ensembles. So you won't only have drum set, there will also be like auxiliary percussion going on. And then it isn't just him on the horn, he'll have like a wind section where it's not like just saxophone or brass. Like a lot of instruments, a lot more instruments than you would typically hear in like, you know, it's not like big band music, if that's what you're thinking of. It's not necessarily that instrumentation either. So he likes to write for large groups, which certainly contributes to sort of this cinematic nature for sure. So Max, something that you and I have talked a lot about with Kamasi kind of leading up to this episode is his sound. And there's a lot of very, very nuanced discussions to be had on that. But what are kind of some of your impressions to that effect?
So there's, gosh, what a good caveat there, because there are a lot of little things that I would love to talk about. I want to take a step back to kind of a fundamental concept that's going on that I found a cool anecdote for that teaches a concept that you and I have talked about quite a bit over, you know, our years of being musicians and working with musicians, and that's articulations. So we talk a lot about the different schools that people go through, you know, whether that be like a traditional educational higher learning university sort of thing, or conservatory, or like learning colloquially on the street. There was an experience that Kamasi had that kind of brought the two together for him. At least that's what I ultimately get out of it. When he was in college, he got the opportunity to play in Snoop Dogg's band in his horn section. He said, when you play jazz in school, you talk about articulation, but it's a very light conversation. The question was about what you were playing, not how you were playing it. But when I was playing with Snoop, what I was playing was pretty obvious. Anyone with ears could figure it out. The question was how to play it with the right articulation and timing and tone. When you look at the people that Kamasi has played with, and you look at the caliber of those people, and then you listen to the caliber of his music in general, you realize that there's something going on here. And there's something that you will notice with all of the people that we cover on on this podcast, I would wager to say, is that there is a strong focus and mastery of the fundamentals. And articulation is one of those things. Not only does he know how to start the note, but he knows how to stop the note. He is making extremely deliberate choices in every aspect of every note. And that's in his, not just in his playing, but in his composition and his arrangement. So when we talk about Kamasi's sound, it's important to recognize that all of these things that he's doing are deliberate. He's taking the time to make sure that that note sounds the way it does in the song, in the context of the other players, in the context of the album. I think that's very important to discussing and qualifying Kamasi's tone, like his personal sound, which you and I have spent, I wouldn't say a long time on, but like a strangely long time trying to put our finger on. how do you describe Kamasi Washington's tone? I think we arrived at him sounding bold and confident, but not sharp. Powerful, but not... I mean, you could probably describe that better than me, but like comparing him to like a Michael Brecker, he doesn't sound like that. He's got a very different approach to his sound.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of, you know, definitely my impression of Kamasi is that he's... I wouldn't compare him with like a Brecker or like a Chris Potter would be another great modern example of like a player whose sound is just like, you know, if your head's too close to the bell of their horn, it will just explode, right? Like, I wouldn't say that his sound is quite like that. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's subdued or that he's underspoken or anything like that either. It's just different. He has a little bit more of a, I don't know, I guess you could say maybe a softer touch, but I mean, there are definitely moments that he kind of lets loose. So hard to say. Caveat to, neither of us are horn players, so perhaps there's certainly pieces of our lexicon that are just underdeveloped for that specific conversation. But the only other thing that I would want to add to his sound is that another very nuanced aspect that is very hard to be good at is to be a complementary piece of a musical situation. So the thing is melody instruments, particularly horn players, guitar players, and piano players are also quite guilty of this. But it's very easy that when you are an instrument that can take the lead role and naturally does, it's hard to practice some good restraint. A lot of times, if you are in a supportive role, but you are nevertheless given free rein to act as that support, most of the time people don't do that well, in that they will get in the way of whatever is the important thing happening at the time. Kamasi, I believe, because he's played with so many different people and a lot of different musical contexts as a supportive role, he's developed this ability to very masterfully complement the situation, but to not get in the way of what is happening. You know, it's not easy for a horn player to play with a vocalist and to not just completely get in the way. That's something that you learn how to do with a lot of experience, and it really exhibits a lot of musical maturity.
When you say things like that, it clicks to me with one of the things about his tone that I have a hard time putting a finger on is I think that he approaches his playing in his music with his chosen ensemble in a similar way.
Yeah.
His tone, I think, is informed by that philosophy of, I picked these great people to play with, and I am not going to be the total spotlight. I'm going to serve the music.
Absolutely. So. Which is a hallmark of a really great musician. But having said all of that, Max, how would you... I recommend somebody get into Kamasi.
He's into some long, big works, right? So my introduction was with Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, and he did an incredible job there. And I'm going... So, you know, it's kind of hard for me to pick my picks. I don't know. to make my selection of his works when it's, you know... When I love the things that he's been a sideman on so much, Flying Lotus, Run the Jewels, Kendrick Lamar, I mean, list goes on. But I would pick, in chronological order, The Epic, The Choice, and Dinner Party. And I'm gonna stick with that for now.
Nice.
Well, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, my introduction to Kamasi was actually a very dear mutual friend of yours and mine, Eric Watson, a drummer in Salt Lake City.
Oh, man.
He
missed that guy.
Yeah, Eric is always hip to new music of all persuasions, but he introduced me to the Epic when that came out. So I have a little bit of a sentimental connection to that. I also really, really dug Dinner Party, which, if you're unfamiliar with that project, it's a project with Robert Glasper, Terrace Martin, and Ninth Wonder, which we need to do an episode on Terrace Martin at some point. We keep bringing him up, but
he's so cool.
Yeah. But I'm going to pull a little sneaky, and one of my picks was actually one of his sideman works, but I really enjoyed Drunk by Thundercat. Thundercat's a guy that we've talked about doing as well at some point, which certainly we will, but really, really cool music.
Dang it, Parker, I'm kind of hung up on that. You cheated.
Yeah.
Well, fine. That's how if you feel about that. I do want to note that along with his just kind of getting into him, I think it's important to remember if you're going to get into the Epic or Heaven and Earth, those are really long. So do not shy away from listening to those. But it's something you probably want to set down and like really allow yourself to digest, similar to Philip Glass's Einstein on the Beach, or really most Philip Glass stuff. But I've found the EPs to be a little easier to start digesting, as well as his sideman works. So get into him. He's really cool. He does a lot, man. It's really cool. Not that I didn't say that already. And with that, not that we have not tried to defend him so far, here we go with our formal defense. It is taxing to orchestrate music for numerous voices, arrange for the musicians to all come together, get the funding together to pay for the musicians and the studio's time, keep your chops up, have a heavy touring schedule as leader and a sideman. Kamasi Washington doesn't seem to have a lot of downtime, but he gets it all done. Although these arduous processes are relentless, he is a talented writer, arranger, player, thinker, and generous collaborator.
Bandleaders sometimes become tenacious despots. Their artistic vision begins to rule over all, and it can come at the cost of decency towards those who are giving of their time. Kamasi, visionary though he is, contrarily opens up the floor for discussion. A trust is instilled in the musicians who are contributing to the potential of these compositions, and thus the potential of the group is realized in their voices being encouraged, although directed. This sort of balance is difficult to strike, but when those elements can come together, a generous and capable leader with talented and willing participants, the yield is a compelling, inspiring work.
Kamasi infuses this great blend of post-bop, classical, R&B, soul, and other popular art forms into his compositions. While it is not always easy to hear where an artist's influences are coming from, our subject at hand is very clearly studied in what his claimed influences are. One might turn on Fists of Fury and think they are hearing the start to a Beyoncé song written by a film composer from the 60s. Perhaps an oddly specific impression to derive, but then again, we hear much of these ideas perspicuously throughout the score of Michelle Obama's documentary.
His persuasions as a bandleader aside, his gospel-like contributions as a sideman are a testament to his sagacious devotion to the music. Players who have mad chops tend to overplay. Part of what makes someone a great player is the ability to demonstrate restraint and serve the situation to support the setting. If you are accompanying a vocalist, don't blow your load all over the place. If you are simply reacting to a melodic voice, whatever it may be, only play what will enhance, not what will distract. Kamasi is a master of this sort of restraint. He can play his ass off when it's warranted, but he can also make a musical moment just a little sweeter than it would have been.
Kamasi's got the goods. He can play, he can write, he can support. For those reasons, he has made a huge splash in the modern music world. It is not often that you hear of a player stemming out of the jazz tradition playing Coachella, but there we have it. It is music meant to be enjoyed by all. Raw, genuine, and fierce. So thanks for listening. Kamasi is really cool for a lot of reasons, and we did have to, you know, pick and choose a lot of the things that we wanted to talk about, because there, you know, there's just, as with everyone we talk about on here, there's just so much to unpack. But Kamasi is important for a lot of reasons that, you know, we're continuing to see, and it's really cool kind of seeing this play out, you know, in our lifetime and as we're developing as players too. So we hope you've enjoyed it and have a greater appreciation for the process and philosophy that's going on here, as well as for the music. It's really cool stuff, both his works and those that he's contributed to as a sideman.
And of course, again, go follow us on Instagram at the Musicians Musician Podcast if you want to keep up with different listening suggestions and also announcements of new episodes and different fun content like that. And also, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to shoot us a DM on Instagram or shoot us an email at the Musicians Musician Podcast at gmail.com.